and welcome to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program. I am Mike. I'm joined, of course, by my co-host Drunkard STL on the Twitters.
Hello.
Also joining us via Skype, Mr. Travis Hulse.
Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciate it every time.
I guess I worded that wrong, Travis, because I said, like, you know, you're here, but you're not like a co-host. You're a co-host also, Travis.
Hey, I was a co-host for a very long time.
Yeah, and it is podcast month, so we do have a fellow podcaster, although...
So this is a very special one, because this is not a person you've heard on the show countless times throughout the year.
WFOD version.
Very version. Special episode.
Matt, formerly of the Lotus Cast, currently of a show that does not have a name, that is using the Lotus Cast's feed. That's a mouthful, Matt.
Oh, I have the perfect name for your new show, and it's called The Chuck Wagon.
Chuck Wagon.
I like the Chuck Wagon.
Good. I like that.
Thank you.
I've been calling it the as-yet-untitled Matt Chuck program.
You gotta call it Project. You can't call it Program. It's gotta be Project.
Project. Mm.
Makes it sound cooler, you know, hipper.
Makes it sound like I'm doing something important.
Joining us a little bit later on, we do have an exclusive interview with the former vocalist of the band Three Dog Night. Mr. Chuck Negron will be on the program.
Ooh. It's on the Kryptonite, right? That was their big one?
No. That's... Three Doors Down. Travis. Three Dog Night was Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
Oh, not Third Eye Blind.
And a lot of three bands. Now that you think about it, there's a Seven Mary Three.
Yep.
Well, let's not forget about Three Days Grace.
I hope 3 Days Grace, of course, I enjoy them as
there's
well.
There's a lot of three bands.
Everything about you.
You're welcome.
Matt, you had some topics that you were looking up while you were in traffic.
Yeah. Oh man, that's
you got
right,
some
sorry.
BuzzFeed articles. There was one
I
about
that
periods.
We rehearsed this earlier, Mike. The traffic today. Oh, guys, don't you just hate sitting in traffic?
No, it only takes me like 3 minutes.
I was about to say,
to work,
St. Louis doesn't really have traffic.
This is relatable, Matt.
Oh boy, I mean, don't you just hate sitting behind another car? Go ahead, Travis.
No, I mean, I just—it's pretty much wide open road, clear for me, right to work, to get my kids, and on home. I don't really have to really worry about it too much.
Truck traffic, right?
Nope.
You know what I'm saying.
I got straight.
I usually get in before the traffic, Matt, and I leave after the traffic is gone. I work long hours, Matt.
I mean, too, wouldn't you just, like, use that time to, like, kind of self-reflect? And, I mean, it's almost kind of a blessing that you get to be by yourself and, you know, decompress.
You can listen to the WFOD show, like, the whole thing.
I do listen to all of the WFOD show. My commute is an hour and a half one way.
With a lot of traffic.
Yeah, it's a lot of traffic. It is pretty miserable. But I think it is driving me insane because... I have so much time to myself just trapped in that car.
And what city is this in?
No, I commute from New Hampshire to Massachusetts every day, which I understand they're right next to each other, but I live very close to Vermont. And anyway, nobody.
Man, it's too far. It's too far, your commute.
It's an 86-mile commute.
So why don't you move to Massachusetts?
Yeah, didn't you move from another state to get to where you are? And so then you got a job an hour and a half from where you moved?
No. I had the job, and I moved. We lived in Massachusetts, and I moved to New Hampshire. But that was because the wife got a job. It was her first gig. Like, she graduated from mortuary school. And she got a job as a funeral director in this little town that we moved to. And she has to be close. Like, she has to be in the same town.
I am trying to envision. So, say my grandpa just died.
I'm sorry.
Arrangements are made. Thank you very much. I didn't make the arrangements. Arrangements are made. I come from my first, like, the wake, even, say. And I show up, and here's this little blue-haired gal. Presiding over my funeral. I mean, I feel like I would be open to it. Does she get looks?
She does. And the town that we live in, it's kind of a small rural town, and it's in very many ways kind of backwards. Like, I no joke, back when in fall, I saw a guy walking down the street. He wasn't wearing a shirt, and on his stomach, he had a big old fat belly, very similar to the drunk stomach. And there was a swastika tattooed on his stomach.
Right on the stomach, huh?
Right. That's there. Nice. And he was choice. Not hiding it. But she runs into some problems here and there. She'll tell me a story where some guy will come in and actually ask where's the head man, like, where's the guy in charge?
Yeah, because I expect all guys who work at funeral homes to look exactly like Mitch McConnell.
Buttoned up, doesn't really say too much. When he does, he speaks in like kind of a low bit, like a baritone, like, I'm sorry for your loss.
Yeah.
Not like this bubbly young gal with multicolored hair who's just like, hey.
Well, you know, she actually doesn't have the multicolored hair anymore. She's just a regular old brunette.
No, she's a professional now, Matt.
Yeah.
So you're in traffic, and that's a result of your wife. It's her fault.
It's fine. It's not that big of a deal. I don't mind the commute, except for the traffic, which is what we're talking about now.
Don't you buy a funeral home? You could like make it a family business. You could do like a 6 feet under situation.
Yeah. I guess we could do that.
Travis, I told Drunk last night that I really wanted to talk about the Cloverfield movie, and that if he wanted to be prepared for it, he should watch the Cloverfield movie. And Drunk said, I don't watch scary movies.
Is that you? I saw that. You shared with me that he doesn't watch scary movies. That is almost shocking to me. Drunk seems like a scary movie type of guy.
And Drunk, explain.
They're not my thing.
Don't like it?
Not my cup of tea.
It makes you scared? Can't sleep at night?
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. I'd just rather watch sports. I watch the occasional movie.
Well, what's your deal with the scary movies? It gives you nightmares?
No, I wouldn't say that. I just don't prefer them.
You know what gives me nightmares?
Show me on this doll where the scary movie hurt you.
Eating peanut butter too close to bed. Gives you nightmares.
Really? Because I eat peanut butter before bed like every
There you
night.
Go. You can watch the scary movies. Just don't eat no peanut butter.
Like, do you know what else like terrifies me and gives me nightmares?
What's that?
Traffic. Matt, what do you think about that?
Oh, let me tell you.
God, this topic is so relatable.
You don't think it's a good topic, Mike?
Travis, you watched the Cloverfield, right?
Yes, I did. As soon as the wife was done watching the like the closing ceremonies of the Super Bowl, like the Lombardi Trophy and all that thing, I was ready to turn the Super Bowl off. Like as soon as
your wife was done.
Oh, I was done. Like as soon as the game was over, I don't need any more of it. Like right. I don't need the presentation of.
Oh,
the
you
trophy.
Don't. You don't want to watch the presentation of the trophy.
If it was the Chicago Bears in the Super Bowl and they won the Super Bowl and it was like my team, which is never going to happen. But if it was like my team that I root for, then I would, I'd stick around. But it was like the Philadelphia Eagles and I just don't give a shit. So I was ready.
That means you would have missed Kevin Hart trying to get on stage with the Lombardi Trophy.
I did hear about it the next day that he was trying to get on stage and that he was just like pretty liquored up.
If you watch those interviews with him, it's so freaking funny, man. He's in that video, that clip of him trying to convince the security guard to get on stage. And he's like, nah, man, I'm not letting you up here.
Did you know I was in a movie with The Rock, for fuck's sake?
Yeah, he dropped an F-bomb on the NFL Network after that. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, but like, I was ready to turn it off. The wife wanted to watch the Lombardi Trophy presentation and all that, which is fine. But as soon as she was done and she started getting ready for bed, I cranked that Cloverfield movie on immediately.
And Travis, that Cloverfield movie was not a Cloverfield movie. They retroactively made it a Cloverfield movie.
Well, so was 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Right. They made a movie and they were like, how are we going to make people give a shit about this movie? And then they like added some Cloverfield shit.
Right.
So that's kind of what I like about the Cloverfield movies, aside from the first one, which is a Cloverfield. It's the Cloverfield movie.
Yeah. Giant monster.
10 Cloverfield Lane was not so much what was happening around as much as it was what was happening inside the bunker. Right. Like,
right.
That's what made it great. And then, I mean, I haven't seen this movie. But now hearing that kind of excites me that it's a movie. It's its own story, just surrounded by the events of Cloverfield.
Yeah, it's just like 10 Cloverfield Lane, where if you are like a Cloverfield fan, if you follow like the ARG and stuff, it's there's like little hints dropped. There's like specific like gas stations they go to that have been in all the Cloverfield movies, and there's like obvious hints that it's in the same universe, and like the narration at the front of the movie is like, okay, I see how it ties to Cloverfield in the very, very, very end.
How long is the movie?
Like an hour and a half max, like hour and 20 something, I think.
You know what? I could I could actually probably watch that in my commute when I'm sitting in traffic.
That's a good idea, Matt. God damn traffic. You know, the traffic, it's pretty soul crushing, the traffic.
Really is, Mike.
You just want to get from point A to point B, but you know.
Guys, I'll tell you what, if you're listening to this while you're sitting in traffic, you let us know. You call 636-487-HAND and you just say, guys, sitting in traffic. And let me tell you, traffic is the worst. We understand, guys. We're with you.
We empathize with your situation, and we'd like to get your hot take on this traffic situation that you're in. How do you cope with traffic? Let us know.
Send us an email.
See, Drunk, the Cloverfield, what's it called? The Cloverfield Paradox.
Yeah.
They made a movie in space.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, when
starring Chris O'Dowd,
the movie was done, they were like, God damn it, what are we going to do with this Chris O'Dowd movie? And they're like, you know what? We should make it a Cloverfield movie. So
we need another one. They're clamoring for another Cloverfield movie.
They added in a couple of things. They got a different guy to be on the ground and say Cloverfield a couple times. And then they watched a video of him from up in space. And they're like, oh, this guy's talking about Cloverfield stuff. But they don't say Cloverfield because it wasn't a Cloverfield movie.
No.
Sounds amazing.
There is a really cool thing that I don't know if it's just a coincidence. And this is not really a spoiler because this movie is marketed as, hey, remember Cloverfield? Well, these are the events leading up to it, this is a spoiler. It's not really, but kind of. But there's the scene where apparently we're supposed to believe that the whole Cloverfield situation is caused by this spaceship somehow. That's as far as I'm going to go. But you discover this. That this happens at 18 minutes and 20 seconds into the movie. Well, if you sync up this and the original Cloverfield, when you first get a glimpse or get like a feeling that this is a monster movie, Cloverfield at 18 minutes and 20 seconds is when the lights go off in the apartment and you start hearing stomps and people start screaming and things start happening. So the first appearance of the monster in the original Cloverfield is the exact same minute point in the movie Cloverfield Paradox that this is supposedly occurring.
So you're all in on this Cloverfield, Travis.
This is your thing. God, I love Cloverfield. Since the beginning, when there was like 10 months of marketing built up to the original Cloverfield, where it was just like from J.J. Abrams, you know, and it's like they're not showing you anything. There was like that teaser trailer where it was like a train getting derailed and something was trying to, you know what I mean? And there's so much build up to this Cloverfield flick. And when it came out, it was like, you know, this found footage thing that was making tons of people sick, and I, you know, TJ Miller's first like role, and Odette Useman when she was Odette Useman and not Odette whatever the hell she is now, looking hot as hell. Yeah, I was into this giant monster movie pretty hard, and
you know, I'm right there with you, Travis. I loved Cloverfield. I thought Cloverfield was a great movie. You know, I wasn't too hot on found footage films. I might be one of the few people that liked Blair Witch Project, but I loved Cloverfield, and everybody that I've ever talked to has always like given me shit for it. They're like, that is a terrible movie, that was awful. I remember the people that I went to see that movie with, they still every once in a while go, oh yeah, like they're kind of older and stupid. They're like, remember that time we went to that movie? Oh, that was terrible. I'm like, that
stupid movie.
The like, thing I that I got liked. From Cloverfield was that I felt like they made it up as they went along. Like they were like, okay, now there should be little spidery Cloverfields that eat people.
This is awesome though, because it like kept you on your toes, because since they were making it up as they went along, you had no idea what to expect from moment to moment.
I want to know where I'm going. I don't want to just be in traffic without a destination in mind. I don't want to just mindlessly be out on the road staring at the car in front of me with no destination in mind, Travis.
Oh, that reminds me a lot of traffic.
Those are the best ways to do it, though, if we're being honest.
Just getting on the road and driving?
Just getting on and driving.
When I get stuck in traffic, I'm always, you know, on point to where I'm headed. So just all those
cars. Yeah, and with Cloverfield, it's not a really good analogy because you know where you're headed when you start the movie is to the end of the movie.
Yeah, but the end of the movie could just be like you watched a space movie.
No, I see what Mike's saying. Mike's saying, all right, you have point A and point B, right?
I want them to know what story they're telling me.
There's traffic on the way, so he takes a different route that he didn't expect to take, and then he finds out that he's also in traffic again, and he has to take another route to avoid that traffic.
So we're talking about the opening scene from Office Space where he continues to get into the different lane and it keeps being the slowest lane.
What I'm saying is, if you watch an hour and 40 minute space movie and you care about these people in space and that they get to Earth safely, and then like they get in an escape chute, and then a big giant monster jumps out and goes rah, and then that's the end of the movie. It's stupid. You didn't tell me a story. You're just like, oh, hey, look, this is from that other movie.
Now, the story is, and it's, I mean, I know a lot of people didn't get it, and people are kind of hating on this movie. I was not as big of a fan of the movie itself as I was of the first two. Like, I was fine with this. I like how it tied in. It was a fun space movie. It was cool to see them tie it together. But, yeah, I mean, I get the shortcomings of the movie, but it did do what it was supposed to do. Like the whole idea of this was that they're getting into this spaceship to solve this Earth's energy crisis. When they did that, they unleashed like this time ripping paradox where it tore open and allowed all these monsters to go into different realities. So this is not our Earth that all of these Cloverfield monsters are showing up on. These are different timelines. These are all different, like 10 Cloverfield Lane is not the same Earth as the original Cloverfield. This is all separate timelines.
Are we finding out that Cloverfield is a prequel to Pacific Rim?
They could all be in the same universe, I suppose.
They just find out that everything is tied to everything. Forrest Gump, the whole fucking thing.
Yeah. Well, everything could be a Cloverfield movie because, like, they claim that Cloverfield 4 is already shot and done and ready to go, and it's a World War II movie.
Been released. You've already seen the movie. Just don't know it yet.
Before Paradox came out, there was rumblings that it might go direct to Netflix, but nobody had any idea that they were going to announce it during a commercial and release it directly after the big game. But even before anybody knew what was going on with the Cloverfield Paradox, which used to be called the God Particle, they said, hey, there's a rumor now also that Cloverfield 4 is also shot and done, and it's set in World War II.
So you have a movie, you make this sci-fi epic, and then they come to you and they say, hey, man, we just add a monster at the end and call it a Cloverfield movie. It's like what they did with all the diehards. All the diehards were originally scripts for something else, and then they just added John McClane to them and made them Die Hard movies. Like Lethal Weapon 4 was written to be Die Hard 3. And then they didn't make Lethal Weapon 4. And they were just like, let's just make it Die Hard. Get Samuel L. Jackson to be Murtaugh.
This is just a little bit different, though, because you're right. It does seem like this was a movie that was shot and done and retroactively turned into a Cloverfield movie, which I do think that has happened before. Like, there's plenty of movies that have kind of funky histories. Like, they, you know, like the newest one with that Kevin Spacey thing where they completely shot him out of it. There was like I think Exorcist 4 was shot and done, tested horribly. So they hired another director to make a completely different Exorcist 4. So there's like two versions that they actually released of Exorcist 4. But I believe there have been movies in the past that they have shot, completed, and they're like, fuck, we don't know what to do with this. So they rebranded it with like a franchise tag. They like called it blah, 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 part two, blah, 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 part three.
J.J. Abrams is doing like how they introduce gay characters into movies, like after it's been released and they've made all their money. Like, yeah, that character, I've always thought that was I've always thought that character was gay. And then J.J. Abrams is just like, yeah, you know,
that movie right there. Is that a gay wink in there? To have the guy come back and give somebody a gay wink.
That's your new gay icon.
Get some buzz.
Like Dumbledore.
Like the Babadook. You know what? The Babadook being a gay is a perfect example of that.
Yep.
Like, it's like, you know what, guys? The Babadook's a gay.
Sounds like I'm glad I didn't watch this movie, though.
It was a little scary drunk.
Yeah.
You don't watch scary movies.
I don't.
Don't like them. What was the last scary movie you watched? What was the one that turned you off? What was the one that made you say, don't do scary movies no more? Done.
So if drunk was like the in the opening scene of in place of Drew Barrymore of Scream, and the killer calls up and says, do you like scary movies? It would have been over right away because drunk would have just been like, no, not really.
Nope. Hate him. Thanks, buddy.
No, I'd rather watch some sports. See you later.
I don't want to do this survey no more. Bye.
What's your favorite scary movie? Don't have one. It's not really my genre.
I told you, I don't like scary movies.
But yeah, I did see It when I was a wee litty lad, and you know.
A what?
A wee litty lad.
Guys, we're going to break.
Strangely, we like all the same pop culture bullshit that you like.
This Wallace guy?
We're friends.
I already called dibs on him.
Dahlia, you barely know him.
Can I help you?
I'd like to try on that dress.
It's a size 2. Are you a 2?
Yes.
I'm gonna get the measuring tape. I'm a 2. Oh,
Wallace!
Yes?
I need you to come in here.
What?
You kind of stuck.
Are your eyes closed?
Yes.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Die Hard 7.
Looking for the perfect gift for your young ones? Look no further. Dixco presents the Mike Moore doll. This 10-inch hero will complement the collection of kids young or old.
I keep it in a box so it retains its value. Hashtag Team Mike.
You can pose him. You can move his mouth. You can dress him up in lady clothes. It's your doll. We aren't going to tell you how to use it.
His narcissism is so lifelike.
The Mike Moore doll even includes 3 classic Mike scenes.
We have a great show tonight, guys. I like feet. Eat lead, Cobra.
Don't miss your opportunity to own a mic of your own. Go to WFODix.com and get one today. Supplies are limited. Act now.
WFOD!
One is the loneliest number that you ever do. 2 can be as bad as 1. It's the loneliest number since the number 1.
Bye.
Guys, our guest tonight is the former vocalist of legendary rock and roll band Three Dog Night. His memoir, Three Dog Nightmare, is available via ChuckNegron.com or Amazon March 13th. Chuck Negron is on the program.
Hi, Mike.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, well, thank you.
When you write a biography, do you feel like a weird sense of finality, like nothing else can happen to you because it won't be in the book?
Actually, what happened was I wrote the book in the 90s, and it became a bestseller, and, you know, it really did well. Then it went out of print. They were selling them, like, on eBay and all these other places for people who had books for it. Very expensive. So what I did this time is I wrote 11 new chapters because it was 20 years later.
Right.
And with new perspectives. Plus, you know, we lost Corey Wells from Three Dog Night, and I wrote a chapter about him. We lost Jimmy Greenspoon from the Three Dog Night, and I lost my twin sister to cancer, so I wrote a chapter about that. And then I started suffering from a car accident that I had where my ribs broke and ripped my lungs apart.
Oh, geez.
And finally, I got to the point where I had to use oxygen, you know, to continue. And I didn't want to sing on stage with a cannula or oxygen. So my manager found these glasses called OxyView, where you actually can't see them. The oxygen comes through the frames of of the glasses. And
I think I saw a picture of you. You have like things going down your nose a little bit.
Yeah. So on stage, you can't see it at all. So, you know, so I was able to continue my career.
Wow.
There's a lot of things I wanted to write about. And, so I saw things in different perspectives since, you know, the Three Dog Night stuff was, 40 years ago. And so, I wrote a chapter about, the fond memories I had when we first got together. And then, I wrote a bunch of stuff with a different perspective. A much older man looking back. So
you remembered the stuff that you didn't put in it the first time and added. That's a good way of going about it. Just keep rewriting it until you get it right.
Well, actually, a lot of stuff has happened in the 20 years of my relationship with Three Dog Night. And, so there's a lot to write about.
And the book is kind of a cautionary tale about drug use and all that. And there's so many of these cautionary tales out there, but it seems like people still just keep falling into the trap. And I wonder if you have like some kind of perspective as to why that happens. It seems like no drug story ends well.
Yeah, well, that's one, I think, why my book, was successful when I first wrote it. I had 5 years clean and sober. Now I have 26.
Yeah.
So like when I say my perspective has changed, I've been sober and clean a long time. Have helped a lot of people and have seen a lot of people die in my business, my peers. And then, with the new advent of all these pills that are so deadly dangerous, and we're losing, we lost more people from ODs than we did in the Vietnam War. These young kids and people that aren't really addicts, they're just being given drugs that are too powerful. Now, I mean, in the early 1900s, when heroin first came out, you could buy it over the counter because it was like a miracle drug. It just really stopped all pain, and you could function on it. Then they realized it was a dangerous drug, as was cocaine, which was also legal. And they took them off. They took them off the market. So heroin disappeared in as far as people being able to get a prescription or buy it. And that's what they should be doing with these drugs. I mean, if they knew what to do in the 1900s, why don't they know what to do now? If these drugs are killing people, ban them.
Do you feel in a weird way we kind of deify people who, end up dying from? I mean, I'm thinking like, people like Chris Farley and Amy Winehouse and stuff. And, these people that dive and, they never get old and do Geico commercials. Do you feel like, there's something appealing about that end?
You mean dying?
Well, I guess, yeah. But I mean, in a way, those people kind of just, they remain where they were. They are like forever young in our minds.
Well, you know what? That's not actually true. These people died. You know, Farley fell and broke his nose. He was on a floor. You know, Amy Winehouse, you know, weighed over 100 pounds. That's not forever young. That's forever pathetic. And when they're found dead, it's not anything anyone would ever want to see. They're not going to.
Of course not. But I mean, I just mean, yeah. You know, we never saw the decline. You know, I mean, like, you know, we remember. And I'm using a lot of. I guess I'm from a different generation than you, Chuck. But you know, yeah. like Nirvana. You know, like you know, they put out two albums that'll live on forever, and we never got to see the 10th album that maybe people didn't connect with as much. I'm not saying that, like, it's.
No, I understand. I'm just saying, what does that mean? I mean, when you say that, what impression does that leave with you? I don't know, is what I'm trying to follow.
I don't know, but I feel like the drug stories and the sex, drugs, and rock and roll lifestyle. It must mean something to people that we keep seeing it over and over again. It must be attractive in some way, because everything says not to do it. Every cautionary tale you see says not to do it, but still people do it.
Yeah, well, you know, it starts out in an innocent way. I mean, like, I'll just my story for an example. I just gotten out of college. I played college basketball. I was a scholarship ball player, all-city ball player in New York, where some of the toughest competition in the world was. I was an athlete, never smoked, never drank, clean living guy. And when I signed with Columbia Records, they wanted me to go out and, you know, get involved with the culture and, you know, kind of, because I was, you know, really...
Yeah, Three Dog Night was a very clean cut. You guys had like a really good guy image, right? You were...
Yes, we did, but that was not the case. I mean, we had the bass player died of a heart attack from cocaine and speed. Jimmy Greenspoon was a heroin addict. That everyone but Corey Wells indulged in drugs and cocaine. So, you know, but, you know, how it happens innocently, in an innocent way, you know. You know, you see all your peers, like the six, you see all your peers that are successful. And they're doing it, so you just think, oh, well, you know,
yeah,
they're not stupid. They're big stars.
Well, and all of their heroes, you know, growing up, they all did it, too. It's just the thing that you do.
And the thing is, addiction. I mean, addiction is a thing. These people would walk away once they knew it was bad for them, but you can't. Because you're now physically addicted, you have the mental obsession, and you're, right. and it's over. Your right of choice is gone. Because your body and your brain is telling you, you need this. So, you know, you're in a catch-22, whereas most people can walk away, addicts can't. Because their physical, their chemistry changes when they use these drugs. And if they don't stop by intervention or something, they die.
If I'm a Three Dog Night fan, I want to hear the backstage stories about, you know, how you made your 12 gold albums and your 21 consecutive Billboard singles. If I'm not necessarily, you know, I'm a casual listener. I know Joy to the World and stuff. You know, I see, you know, a guy with a broken nose on the cover of the book. And I say, oh, man, some really crazy shit must have happened to that guy. I want to hear all the crazy stories. It's just. It's something weird about us, I feel like, that we like want to see that story of people fallen.
Yeah, I think people are, I don't know if it's weird, but I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I think people want to know what happened to people, but I think most people also wish that the story ends well.
Yeah.
I mean, because I think that's what people like. I know Americans like happy endings. You know, that's what I want. They're so sports-driven. You know, because it's exciting, and if their team wins, it's great. But you know, it's just like a car accident. You know, people slow down a little.
Yeah,
why?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I hope everybody's okay. Is that what they're thinking, or do they want to see the carnage?
Yeah. Or you know, I hope I don't see somebody. You know, as they stare. You know.
And so after you know your story kind of took a dark turn, you did crawl out of things and recover, and that's great.
Well, it took 13 years. I was in 37 rehabs. 13 years.
37 rehabs?
13 years in and out of rehab.
You just wanted to hit all of them, find the best one?
No, I knew which one of the best ones were. I stayed away from those.
Oh, so you didn't want to get better?
No. I needed to go to stay out of jail, stay out of prison, to get my family and my loved ones off my back because they just couldn't take it anymore. And so I used that the rehab system to kind of get myself back and, you know, just kind of get out of the way for a while. And then one day I went into a rehab called Cry Help, and they changed my life. I stayed there almost a year. And I realized you need to stay in a rehab a long time when you've used 25 years. And, I was down 126 pounds. I'm 6'1", 200-pound guy. I weighed 126 pounds.
That's it's not a lot.
Yeah, no, it's not. I had like 15 teeth left.
And
from car accidents.
You still do work with Cry Help today, don't you?
Sure, yeah, I still do. You know, they saved my life. And, you know, I do work with all sorts of people. You mentioned Nirvana. I got a call from, there was a program called Musicians Assistance Program, which is now a part of NARIS, the Grammy people. And they called me, the president called me, and he said, Kurt Cobain is in, is in a hospital. He wants to see you. Because he heard, everyone knows your story, especially junkies. They know, the miracle and what a crazy junkie you were, and he wants to meet you. So anyway, I was heading down, and I got a call that he jumped out the window and he disappeared, and that he was so embarrassed and ashamed what had happened to him at, height of his career. And a couple of days later, he killed himself.
Wow.
So Rick James, he called me. I went down and sat with him for hours in the hospital. And when he came out, we became friends, but he wouldn't stop drinking. And finally I got a call that he died. So I've worked with a lot of people. Same thing with the guy, Winan.
Scott Weiland.
I helped him, and finally I got to the point. I said, you don't listen, and you're going to die. And he got very upset that I said that, and he died.
Yeah.
So I work with a lot of people. Some I can't mention because they're alive, and they'll if they want to tell people they have a problem, they can. But the others, everyone knows. So that's what I do. I help people in hopes. The sad thing about it is that very few recover.
And I guess you were saying, you didn't want to get helped. I guess that you have to want to get the help to receive it.
Well, no, I got sober in the end, and I still didn't want it, but they changed my life. And a lot of these guys want it desperately. Just the addiction is such a draw that they can't get through the sickness and the mental depression and all that it takes, waking up with no medication and realizing you've ruined your life or you're ruining your life. And it's too overwhelming, and they go back to using.
So you're still out performing now, right? You still do a bunch of dates every year all over the country?
Yeah, I do about 50, 60 dates every summer.
And
I'll be out this summer.
I have a curiosity with performers, and I've asked this question to a lot of people, and I want to ask it to you. When you go out on stage, what do you do with your wallet? Is your wallet on you? Do you leave it backstage? Where's your wallet at when you perform?
It's in my pocket.
You just leave it on you?
Yeah.
Chuck, that's a rare one. Yeah. That's a rare one. Most people don't leave it on them.
Yeah, well, that's kind of stupid. You're in a place that you're just kind of going through. Where do you put it? You leave it in your dressing room. People come and go.
I guess people are concerned about how they look. They want their lines to look.
Yeah, but I put it in my back. I put it in my back pocket. I mean, if they're concerned, tell them to stick it in their junk. make it appear like you're really hung.
So your advice is to leave your wallet on you. Leave your wallet on you. That's.
Well, yeah, I leave it on because I don't think about it. It's part of who I am. I don't go out on the stage and, put on, glitter underwear or you know what I mean, or do a whole bunch of change. It's a very natural experience for me to go on the stage. So, you know.
I've been doing it a long time. Been on stages since the 60s.
Yeah. Well, actually, since the 50s, my first record I did with a group called the Rondells when I was 15. Played the Apollo, played a lot of places.
Wow.
As a, you know, very young man. So I've been doing it my whole life, and I love it. But yeah, there was a time that I didn't wear my wallet. In the 60s, you know, the pants were too tight to have a wallet. You know, there's just enough room for a cucumber.
So, Chuck, the book is Three Dog Nightmare, is available on your website. You can get a signed copy at chucknegron.com, available March 13th. You can pre-order it now. Yeah. Chuck, thanks a lot for taking the time. I appreciate it.
You got it, buddy. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
To go. So where are you going to tomorrow? And I see that these are lies to come. Would you even care? And I'm feeling.
You guys have a minute for a quick Chuck Negron story? So I interview Chuck Negron on the program. You just heard it just now. You heard Chuck Negron. And what happened was, at the very end of the interview, he made a joke that I didn't hear.
Tell him why you didn't hear it, Mike.
Well, because, see, when I have I know what you're setting up, Drunk. Why don't you go ahead and say it so I can tell him the story? Go ahead and say it. I know what you're setting up, Drunk.
Because he wasn't paying attention to the interview. Anyway.
So when I tell a guy, you know, that I'm going to do 20 minutes with him, I try to be respectful of his time, and I try to wrap up 20 minutes, right? So I'm looking at the time. I'm getting ready to wrap up. And he tells a joke that I did not hear. And his joke was that... in the 1960s, they wore their pants really tight, and he didn't have room. I asked the wallet question, and he didn't have room to keep his wallet in his pants. All he had room for was a cucumber. And so what he was implying was that he stuffed to make his dick look bigger. But
he got a big hog.
It got nothing, and it would have gotten something if I'd have heard it. I'd have laughed at that joke. That's a good joke.
So you didn't respond at all.
I didn't respond at all. I immediately wrapped up with him when he was done telling the joke.
So he told that joke and said, I only had room for the cucumber. And you said, well, thanks, Chuck DeGron. Where can people find you?
That's exactly what happened, Travis. It's exactly what happened. So we wrapped up, and I went upstairs, and I was talking to Laura, and I said, you know what? I think that interview went really well. You know, like I thought it was great. Like he was a pleasure to talk to. He's a super nice guy. I thought we had a good conversation. I mean, you guys heard it, and my phone rings, and it's a California area code, and I'm like, oh no, are they unhappy with it? Are they calling to yell at me? Well, what happened? So I pick up the phone, and he goes, Mike, it's Chuck. It's like, oh hey, Chuck, what's up? And he said, I hope that I didn't off-put you with my blue humor. And if I did, I apologize. And I said, absolutely not, Chuck. I don't even know what you mean, but no, you certainly did not offend me. And he goes, oh, because you seemed kind of off-put by my blue humor. And I mean, if Chuck only knew what program he was on, I don't think he knows. but Chuck, you didn't offend me with your blue humor, buddy. I apologize. I would have laughed at the joke. I didn't hear the joke.
He was just trying to get you out on time.
I'm so nervous that I'm going to waste people's time that I want to wrap up when I say I'm going to wrap up. So that's what happened. But yeah, Chuck called me because he thought that he offended me, and I assured him that he did not.
And that is the mark. What, like you said, what a good guy he was to talk to. Like that is the mark of a good person who is like, man, I hope I didn't offend this stranger that I just talked to for 20 minutes.
I hope my cucumber joke didn't ruin his entire day.
Good joke too. Like I could see why he would be.
Solid joke, Travis.
Worried that you didn't respond to that at all.
You know, when I found out that Mike was going to be interviewing Chuck Negron from Three Dog Night, I got a little excited because my mom used to always tell me this story about how she dated the drummer from Three Dog Night, and his name was Ian.
Ian from Three Dog Night, right, yeah.
Yeah, and she named my older brother, her first son, Ian, after... because she liked the name. She was just always a fan of the name Ian.
Oh, because of her whirlwind romance with the drummer from Three Dog Night. Are you sure it was Three Dog Night and not Three Doors Down, Matt?
Well, it couldn't be 3 Days Grace or any of those bands because I don't think any of the bands, including Three Dog Night, have a member named Ian in them.
Oh, she told you that lie before there was Google.
Yeah, I went to Wikipedia. And they don't have a past member named Ian.
Should have asked Chuck about Ian.
So I wonder if maybe my mom either was gullible and went home and banged some guy named Ian.
who said, claimed he was in Three Dog Night.
It's right. A good line.
Yeah, and pre-internet, to verify that shit.
Right, he goes and plays Mama Told Me Not to Come on the jukebox and said, hey, hear the drums on this track? That's me. That's Ian. Me. Let me buy you a drink.
Ooh-ee. Yeah.
And the rest is history. So did you Google, drummers named Ian?
No, after that, I was like, wow, my mom lied to me. Again.
One in a series of angry lies.
First Santa Claus, now this. God.
What about Santa Claus? What are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about, drummer?
Oh, never mind.
No, I want to hear your Santa Claus story. This is ridiculous. Don't bring it up if you're not going to tell us.
He doesn't exist.
What?
He doesn't exist.
Who puts all the fucking presents underneath the tree then, drunk? Riddle me that.
Stupid fuck.
Just stay up next Christmas and spy for yourself.
I do. I stay up every Christmas.
Awkward.
Yeah. How the hell else awkward can do all that? They can't do all that cocaine unless I stay up all night.
You know what else is awkward?
Traffic.
Getting stuck in traffic.
Well, who's got a story about traffic?
Everybody, Travis. It's a relatable topic.
I don't know. If you got a story about traffic, why don't you let us know? Just drop us an email at wfodx.com.
Drunk, do you have any relatable topics?
I had two bowls of chili for lunch today, so I hope I don't get the poops.
Travis, are you a Funko Pop guy?
No. There's a handful of them that I enjoy, and I do appreciate them, but I do not buy them. I've gotten a couple in some loot crates and shit, so I have I think I'm looking at three of them in my comic book room here right now, but I do not seek them out.
Normally, I am not either. We buy some for the kids. The kids have some, and I occasionally will see one, and I think, oh, you know what? I'll get that for my wife.
My wife.
My wife.
So what's a Funko Pop?
It's a little guy.
Vinyl action figures.
I know what you're talking about now. Yeah.
So, I remember I got her the Jake and. Finn from Adventure Time because she's a big fan of that show. Anyway,
we're going to follow up the Jake with M the Fat Man.
No. No.
Nice, nice 80s
I've been on a spree
Travis.
Recently and buying a lot of them and decorating my desk. I've got Scary Terry.
I got Scary Terry too, Matt. I saw your Scary Terry and I got jealous, so I went and got my own Scary Terry.
Do you take them out of the box?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I take them out of the box. Do. I don't buy into that
whole
thing.
My collection so far is Scary Terry, Snowball from Rick and Morty. I got an old school Rock from WWF. He's wearing this orange jacket, and he's got his hair and his sunglasses. And then the two that came in the mail today were Elton John and Lemmy Kilmister.
Funko Pop?
Oh, yeah. They make everybody a Funko. James Gunn has got a Funko Pop. They make everybody a Funko
Everybody's
Pop.
Everybody's got a Funko Pop.
Mike showed me his William Wallace.
I have William Wallace, and I have Rowdy Roddy Piper, and I have Mr. T, and I have Scary Terry, and I have Mr. Me Seeks, and I have 11 from Stranger Things.
Jeez, so you're a Funko Pop guy.
And I have Doctor Strange.
You're a Funko Pop guy? I feel like
they're so cute, Matt. I like them.
If I were to start collecting them, I'd probably just go the Game of Thrones cast.
So you can get them.
You say that, but then you go to the Target and you're like, oh my god, they have a Bob Ross Funko Pop. I have to have that one.
My daughter has a Bob Ross Funko Pop.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and what are we gonna do with these things, Matt? What are we gonna do with them?
I don't know. I kind of like having them on the desk though. Like I like looking over here and seeing big black eyed. Fucking Elton John, just sitting there with his cane and his pink glasses and his white suit,
so
sitting next to the Rock. And
I
kind of like to imagine what type of conversations are they having when I'm not around.
Are they like Beanie Babies where everybody thinks they're going to be worth a lot of money, but they're really
no.
Well, no, they're just fun.
Certain people, they definitely are like Beanie Babies where like they forgot about Beanie Babies or they're a generation removed from Beanie Babies. So there are plenty of people because I'm plenty of comic book groups and their interests vary to other collectible things too, and I see people like literally that'll open a closet door and there's like a closet just jam-packed with Funko Pops of all different you know, varieties
still in the box and,
in the box still, like I have three Funko Pops and all three of mine are in the box too. I got a Baby Groot before Baby Groot was a thing that glows in the dark. I got an unmasked Deadpool, and then I got a Joker Batman, and all the, they're all in the box. Probably because I'll sell them because I don't really want them.
once they have more value, you're waiting it out.
No, soon. While Funko Pops are still something that people want, because eventually that company is going to go balls down.
Have like all of them. I mean, this company Funko Pops are on fire right now, and it's something that's been around for a couple years now, right?
Oh, it's probably 4 or 5 years, I bet. And if you want important characters from history, if you want like a Rosa Parks Funko Pop, that probably exists,
right?
What does she do?
She sits in the front of the bus.
Do you have to get the whole Funko bus?
Well,
how would you know it was Rosa Parks?
I always get her confused with the Underground Railroad lady.
Harriet Tubman?
Yeah. So Harriet
Tubman. See, I only know...
So Harriet Tubman didn't sit on the bus.
The distinction is in that Outkast song, because there is not a Harriet Tubman Outkast song.
Gotcha.
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson, but I am for real. That one?
Harriet Tubman. Ooh, I am for real.
Did it make mean to make your slaves cry?
Oh, no.
I apologize a million times.
Bit over.
We're gonna have to
traffic.
We're going to have to erase that one.
Back to traffic.
You know, when I'm
keep it
in
safe,
traffic,
buddy. In traffic.
Is that too much?
Trump Nation. Woo.
I've been enjoying the new Justin Timberlake album.
Don't like it. Don't like it. It's garbage, Matt. It's garbage.
You know
what it is?
It's a strange thing for Mike to say, because Mike is always middle of the road. It's fine.
No, the
right.
thing
and,
about
and
the
typically
Justin
when
Timberlake
it comes to pop, well, typically when it comes to pop music, he's all on board.
The Justin Timberlake album, what happened is they called Justin Timberlake up. They offered him the Super Bowl. He's like, well, I haven't put out any new music in years, guys. What am I going to do? And they said, well, you got a year, make an album. And he was like, you know what? I made that In Time movie, and I've just been kind of hanging out. Haven't really been thinking about music. But maybe I can throw something together. So he just went in the studio for a week, and he made up a bunch of bullshit songs, and he released them. And they're all just safe, boring songs.
It's marketing genius, and you know that's exactly what happened. But he made – it was perfectly executed – where he says, I'm going to be releasing 4 brand new songs and 4 brand new music videos, and I'm going to do 1 a week. And it just so happens it started 4 weeks before the Super Bowl. So it was 1 here, 1 here, 1 here, and 1 this Thursday, and tomorrow my new album drops. But guess what? 2 days after that, I'm playing in the Super Bowl. And here we are on Tuesday after the Super Bowl, and his download, his and Prince, both their download numbers have gone up 534%.
And I'm not like a Justin Timberlake hater. He's made songs that I've enjoyed quite a bit. But this whole album is Walgreens music. It's songs that you ignore in Walgreens. It's boring. It's soulless.
Normally, I'm not like a big pop music fan. I mean, every once in a while, I hear a song. I'm like, yeah, you know what? That one's not bad. I found myself becoming a really big fan of that that broad. Is her name Halsey or something like that? I'm a big fan of the Halsey.
You know, the thing about the Halsey is, like, she always wears super slutty clothes, but she doesn't look comfortable in them. She looks like she's trying on her big sister's slut clothes.
I like that Cake by the Ocean song. That one's pretty good.
I like her music. I'm a big fan. But there's not a lot that really grabs me. And I remember listening to Filthy, and, like, right off the bat, I was a big fan of the song. And then that other one with the Chris Stapleton, I thought was
Say Something is fucking amazing. Like, Justin Timberlake is the best when he puts together, like, dynamic songs. Like, I like his club shit just fine, like Rock Your Body and shit. Like, I'm like, yeah, okay, that's how he came out of the gate with his solo stuff. But, like, his dynamic stuff with, like, where he's got, like, backing vocals, like a choir and shit, and he's got, like, orchestra, like, the majority of, like, the 2020 experience was, like, you know, these dynamic, well-produced songs. And I get what Mike is saying, where it's, like, more the clubby kind of just poppy stuff. But that Say Something song is – that one, that was the first one of the 4 tracks that he dropped that I was like, holy shit, this song is amazing.
Yeah,
I
16 tracks, and one of them is worth a shit.
Well, to be fair, I have not listened to the whole album. I've heard the 4 that he released, and I've heard like 2 other ones on Pandora. So I guess I don't.
I don't know. I've heard a couple other songs on there that are pretty funky, and I enjoyed most of my listening experience to Man in the Woods. I think the name of the album is really stupid.
They did an amazing thing. I don't know if it was Vice or if it was your favorite BuzzFeed, but they took Justin Timberlake's like Barbie NSYNC doll, and they staged every photo that he did for Man of the Woods, where he's like just in like fields and shit. And instead of Justin Timberlake, they like put his Mattel like Barbie doll out there doing the poses. It was pretty great.
So Matt, would you say that Justin Timberlake's new album is your pick of the week? Would that be safe to say, Matt? Justin Timberlake, Man of the Woods, this is your pick of the week. You listen to it in traffic.
Oh, traffic. Am I right, guys?
Right, traffic. It's rough.
Traffic would maybe be closer to what I would call my pick of the week.
Not being in traffic?
No, because I can't avoid being in traffic. So
you just accept it?
Embrace it.
I embrace it, yeah. I mean, I get to listen to a lot of podcasts and radio shows sitting in traffic.
Like the Chuck Wagon?
The Chuck Wagon's a pretty good name, Matt. I think you should
consider it. It's a pretty great name.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
Yeah. I do like the Chuck Wagon.
Drunk pick of the week?
I'm just
forget your comment, man.
Drunk's pick of the week, even though I had one yesterday, would be Celebrity Big Brother starts tomorrow.
Yes, fucking Olympics and Celebrity Big Brother.
Are you gonna give us? Are you gonna give us updates on Celebrity Big Brother? Who's on Celebrity Big Brother this season?
You got Shannon Elizabeth.
Oh wow! Oh.
You got
where they dig her out of?
Do they do Big Brother After Dark for the Celebrity Big Brother?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh,
Chuck Liddell will be on it.
Wow. Haven't heard from Chuck Liddell in a while.
Amarosa.
Amarosa? She just got fired from the White House.
I watched this.
She went directly from the White House to the Big Brother house?
Yeah.
Who else is on it, drunk?
Give me a second.
Give me some more names. I'm waiting with bated breath.
I know.
And this is a weekly program, The Big Brother?
It's a three-day-a-week program.
You're not talking into the microphone, will you?
It's a three-day-a-week like program.
Yeah, sounds like a big investment, Travis. A big investment, 3 days
wait,
a
hold
week.
On, drunk. Are these...
It's a utopia show.
The celebrity Big Brother that's about to happen, are they actually living in the house full time?
Yep.
Or are they only there like a couple days a week?
Nope, full time. All day.
Bullshit.
Day.
It's surreal life where they film for like 3-4 days in a row and pretend it's like months on end.
Well, you can get the 24/7 feed and you can literally watch them 24 hours a day.
The Big Brother After Dark, do they ever get naked?
Usually the producer will pan to a different camera. If that happens.
So Shannon right, Elizabeth so... could potentially get with Chuck Liddell.
Yeah.
We saw Shannon Elizabeth nude in like the prime.
In like her heyday.
So we got this fellow named James Maslow. Exactly.
Who's James Maslow?
It looks like he was on Nickelodeon's Big Time Rush.
I don't even know what that is.
And was a boy band of the member of the same name.
Not into it.
Speaking of Nickelodeon, I think actually this might be a little off. I think it's Disney. You have a couple of little gals. Do they watch that Livin' Maddie show?
No.
Oh, good. Good on you. Keep them away.
All right, and then we got Aradhana Gutierrez.
Who's that?
She's best known for the Steve Harvey. You're the Miss Universe. No,
she's
I'm
a Miss
sorry.
Universe.
You're
yeah, from Universe.
Is she the one that lost?
She's the one that
the
lost.
The one that
yes.
Steve Harvey mistakenly named as Miss Universe.
Oh.
She didn't win.
We got Ross Matthews,
Mark McGrath.
Yep, Mark McGrath.
What?
Meta World Peace.
He was a basketball
formerly
player.
Formerly Ron Artest. Yes, that's correct. Chuck Liddell, Keisha Knight. Pullum.
Cosby Kid.
Rosby, yep. Rudy Huxtable.
Rosby.
Yep. Rosby yep.
Kid.
Oh, Rosby Kid.
He's a Rosby Kid.
Marissa Janet Winker.
Who's she?
She's an actress.
So, you're going to watch this regardless.
From Hairspray.
Right?
Think I'm going to watch this.
And then like, Brandy Glanville.
Pretty interesting cast.
So, you're into it.
I'm into all Big Brothers. Big Brother anything I'm into, so...
How did this happen?
You know, it started when I was like in grade school, and you know, I liked it, and I haven't stopped watching it. So
it's really interesting to me when people are into that. There's a guy at work that's probably, I don't know, maybe 2 years older than I am, and he still gets excited when a new Survivor drops.
Yeah, you wouldn't peg a reality show watcher. It just kind of hits you, I guess. I like if I told you that Drunk was a Big Brother watcher. I mean, you know it anyway, but if a common man just saw Drunk, they probably wouldn't say, oh, yeah, that guy watches Big Brother 3 days a week.
He loves Big Brother.
Yeah. Loves it.
Keep it on the DVR, watch the Big Brother After Dark.
So eventually, does somebody win Big Brother?
Yeah.
Like, do you win?
Mm-hmm. $500,000.
And so they kick somebody off every week?
Yep.
Huh. Wow.
And I mean, same deal as Survivor. The last 9 people to be kicked off are jury members. And
Travis, do you have a pick of the week?
My pick of the week is Victor Crowley. It is the third sequel in the Hatchet series, Hatchet 4, I guess you would call it. It just dropped Tuesday, the February 6th, and I enjoyed it very much.
Drunk, did you see the first 3 Hatchet movies?
Nope. Is this like Machete or?
No. No.
I mean, you know. Kinda.
The Lotus cast was supposed to interview Adam Green once.
You were?
Yeah, we had it all scheduled with his people and everything that we were going to meet him at a convention and interview him before it opened, and they would not let us in the building.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
I love Adam Green. I'm a fan.
Yeah, he seems like a cool guy.
Yeah.
Cool guy.
We should get Adam Green, Travis.
Yeah, I'd like to get both those hosts of the Movie Crypt podcast, Adam Green, director Adam Green, and also director Joe Lynch, who recently released Mayhem with Steven Yeun and Samara Weaving, which I loved.
I don't think you'd have a hard time. I don't think he's that unattainable.
Probably not. They're busy guys, but yeah, they might be able to get
them. Okay, Mike, do you have a pick of the week?
My pick of the week is Chuck Negron's new book, Three Dog Ooh. Nightmare, available March 13th. He's written it four times, so it's going to be good this time. It was good the other times, probably, but this time it's
even better.
Even better, because he has more perspective. You know what I'm saying, Travis? More.
I'm really curious who my mom fucked.
It wasn't Ian, Matt.
It might have been Ian, that's for sure.
But not the drummer of Three Dog Night.
You know, if we would have all been together for Chuck Negron, we could have asked him, "Hey, did you ever play? Did you ever play with a guy named Ian on drums?" And he might have said, "Hey, oh yeah, he filled in for us for like 2 months while the other guy was sick. We were, you know, traveling around."
And so he had a lasting impact. Maybe he's not a complete liar. Well, what do you think your brother thinks that he was named after a lie?
Well, I haven't broke the news to him, and I doubt he really cares, but...
He's just fine.
I also think it's kind of strange that a woman would, like, oh, I banged this guy, and I'm going to name my first son after him.
Yeah, and then share that with her children.
With her second child. At some point. It was very strange. We have a very odd family dynamic.
Guys, we'll do it again next week. Thanks for hanging out.
Hashtag podcast month.
If you're in traffic right now, be sure to give us a call, 636-487-HAND. Let us hear about it. And God bless you.
Guns out, funds out. Boy, you kind of silly, think my room is sitting pretty, doing donuts while you suckers like them suckers around titties. Damn, we the committee, gon' burn it down, but us gon' bust you in the mouth with the chorus now. Say, activate the left and right brain. Say, baby boy, your only phone can add your last cut. You focus on the past, your ass will be your has what. That's what you live by, or either that's what you die to. I try to just throw it at you, determine your own adventure, Andre. Got to a station, here's my destination. She got off the bus, the conversation lingered in my head for hours. Took a shower, kinda sour, cause my favorite group ain't coming with it. But I'm with you, cause you're probably going through it anyway. But anyhow, went and died, went on out and bought it, cause I thought it would be jamming. But examine all the flaws, get walls, get awfully sand, and it's costly, but that's all shit. Bro, and I hope I never have to float in that boat. Up Shit's Creek, it's sweet, it's the last quote that I wanna hear when I'm going down. When all said and done, and we got a new Joe in town. When the record player get to skipping and slowing down, all y'all can say is them niggas earn that crown. But until then, push that pulse, everybody move to the back of the bus. Soon you wanna walk and slow with us. We the type of people make the club get crunk. Say, push that pulse, everybody move to the back of the bus. Soon you wanna walk and slow with us. We the type of people make the club get crunk.
You didn't know it's over.
Well,
Thank you for listening. Join us live every Monday night at 9, 8 Central on Strangelabel.com. Listen to our back catalog on iTunes, Stitcher, or our website, WFODix.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WFODix. Give us a call at 636-487-HAND or email us at WFODshow@gmail.com. Special thanks as always to our Patreon sponsors, Brian Kranz, Liquid Lozenge, Harry Balls Anya, and Jody B. If you like what you heard, tell a friend. Be back next week, motherfucker!
Hey guys, Mike here. We have a Patreon now. I know. You've changed, Mike. Look, we're not going to make a thing about this. The show is happening whether you contribute money to it or not. But if you want to throw a buck or two at the dudes who make that thing you like, there it is. We're rewarding you, too, with 5-minute shows about whatever you want, shout-outs, stuff like that. Go to WFODix.com and find it in the Extras tab. Rate us 5 stars on iTunes, too. Fuck. I have changed.